The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
COVID cases are rising. LA County Health Director Barbara Ferrer says since November the 1st, COVID cases have been rising. The county now averaging 1,300 daily cases. That's a 24% jump from last week. Now, about influenza, 12% of sequence cases are testing positive for the flu. Officials say this is unusual this early on in the flu season.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I don't know about you. I can't tell you how many people I know have come down with an ailment. And I'm not sure what it is. You know somebody who's gotten sick lately? Maybe it's a sore throat and runny nose. Maybe it's fever and body ache. Maybe it's COVID, right? We are seeing a rise in RSV with kids and influenza and COVID and all sorts of strange viruses. I work with somebody at the network who I thought he had COVID initially, but he didn't. His symptoms were, he could barely stand. His knees got all weak. His body got weak. His throat was sore. He felt terrible for a day or two. And then he was fine. You know, my own wife has battled, some sort of flu-like symptom for a while, and it's kind of protracted. It certainly wasn't COVID. She tested three times for it. So, but I don't know. We'll talk about it coming up. COVID test positivity is up 50% in 2 weeks in hospitals in California. And look, we're getting into that season. So Dr. Harvey Risch is going to be joining me coming up in a few moments. We'll take a look at COVID. So if you've got a question about vaccines, if you got a question about the symptoms you're seeing, there's new reports coming out from the FDA and the CDC regarding some of the vaccinations. They're now, in fact, I just saw a news report today. Darn, I didn't download it. It was on my phone earlier. I'll see if I can find that news alert. And it dealt with how they are trying to pressure the Biden administration to create almost a crisis for kids in school. And I don't know what that's going to mean. Are you going to remask them? Are you going to mandate vaccines? There's some major universities I'll tell you about, too, coming up. I don't want to get into it now, that are going to make their students be vaccinated. So you may want to listen. That's coming up in just a few minutes with Dr. Harvey Risch. You are welcome to join me anytime. You know that, right? Love hanging out with you. The number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. So pull up a chair. Be part of the conversation. Let's start with this today. Student loans, right? Back and forth. The president's promising to forgive $10,000 to $20,000 worth of student loan debt, right? So courts have shut it down. His administration has petitioned the Supreme Court to allow it to go forward. And a federal district judge in Texas ruled in favor of the Jobs Creator Network suit against the administration, which argues that, only Congress is allowed to make such a move. Meanwhile, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled in favor of a coalition of six states and ordered the administration to suspend the program until final decision is made. So Solicitor General Elizabeth Preliger told the Supreme Court this. She says, because borrowers who default on their student loans face severe financial consequences, Congress specifically authorized the Education Secretary to waive or modify any provision as he deems necessary to ensure the borrowers afflicted by a national emergency are not worse off in relation to their student loans. So that's the argument. That's the case. We'll see how the Supremes ultimately respond. A lot of people are divided on this issue. And you can understand why, if you're carrying student loan, I know part of you is saying, oh, gosh, I really hope that goes through, right? So we'll see. More on that in the days ahead. Hey, did you hear about this, about these Border Patrol agents off the coast of Puerto Rico? They attempted to stop a boat. There were some suspected smugglers on board. Didn't go as planned. The presumed drug cartel members on the boat, they opened fire. They opened fire on these agents, and five of them were shot. Five agents were shot. One was killed. The event right now, they're saying, is under investigation, but the cartel members, apparently they got away with it. And this happened a day after federal authorities came across a capsized boat with, they found 200 pounds of cocaine with a street value of about $2 million just floating around. So Dan Crenshaw, he's a Republican representative from Texas. He is going to introduce an act. It's called the Declaring War on the Cartels Act. And I'm not going to dive into it today, but I do want to unpack this for you in the days ahead, because I think this is a great piece of legislation we should talk to Representative Crenshaw about. It would basically allow federal judges to impose tough punishments for crimes of violence, controlled substance violations, false statements, human trafficking perpetrated by these cartels. These cartels are poisoning America. They really are. They're paying people. They're running drugs across our border. They are running. There's human trafficking going on, and they're getting away with it, and they're becoming more and more brazen. And today you see an American dead, five others shot as a result of this. So it's unfortunate. Let's pray for this. We have a fentanyl crisis in our country right now, and it's not just fentanyl. A lot of other drugs are pouring over the border. And if you have somebody in your family who is struggling with an addiction, you know how destructive and how deadly they are. It's satanic, in my opinion. I know I use that word maybe too frequently, but I really believe this is all part of the master plan of the evil one. I really believe Satan is out to destroy family and out to destroy life. I'm convinced of it. It's hard to argue against that. And I think drugs is one of his more powerful tools. And you can see how this is going through. So whatever we can do to stop them from coming across the border, I think it's important. You know, I've been reporting on these church violence, right? The destruction of statues and breaking stained glass windows and setting churches on fire and graffiti and a whole litany of other things. I shared a story a couple of weeks ago about Bishop Robert Barron. He's now the Bishop of the Diocese of Winona, Rochester, in Minnesota. There was some vandalism in a cemetery there. And what the church does in a situation like that of a church or cemetery or some holy place, some sacred place like that, has been desecrated. They reconsecrate it. And that's what he just did. He reconsecrated the cemetery that was desecrated on Halloween night. And if you don't remember the story, basically some hooligans, some vandals, whatever you want to call them, they spray graffiti on these gravestones and mausoleums and as well as on a statue of the resurrected Christ. You know, they defiled that. All this in Resurrection Cemetery. And Bishop Barron said this. He says, Halloween night, this place was desecrated with some really obscene graffiti. Even the names of Satan invoked. He says, I found that outrageous. So the grounds where the faithful have been buried has been reconsecrated. But if the sacrilege and the desecration is, you know, another incident in the growing list of such attacks on Catholic churches and pro-life centers across the country, you can be counted amongst a number. And that's why I try to report on it and try to make you aware of the gravity of what's unfolding and give you a perspective. My gratitude to Bishop Barron for doing that. Speaking of pro-life centers too, we talked about the bombing of these different centers. There were four pro-lifers. I just heard a story about who were found guilty today of obstructing a police officer, right? They were, I guess, arrested for minor trespassing, disturbing the peace. They went into an abortion clinic in Flint, Michigan, and they handed out pro-life literature. And they handed out red roses to the women in the waiting room. You know, an act like that could clearly change somebody's life if they know there's an alternative, if they get a rose, if their conscience is pricked. They just need to know that there is an alternative or somebody else cares. It could mean a life is saved. I had a great conversation yesterday in my third hour, and I hope you'll go back and listen to this. I was joined by a woman named Kathy Burkus. She told a harrowing tale of being abused by her own brother about later seeking love and ultimately, getting pregnant a couple times out of wedlock and aborting those children and doing heavy drugs and, you know, becoming promiscuous. And it's a story really of God's mercy in her life and how she came to find true healing and freedom from that lifestyle. She was not given an option when she went in for her abortions. In fact, Planned Parenthood encouraged her to do it. Nobody said, hey, there's somebody out here for you. So this group called Red Rose Rescue, they were sentenced to 45 days in Genesee County Jail. So let's pray for them, right? They're going to do a month and a half in a jail, right? A county jail. That's no fun. I know people who've been in prison and they say the state and federal prisons are a lot easier than these county jails. You're in lockdown a lot more time here. And, you know, I just think of Lauren Handy and William Goodman and Patty Woodworth and Matthew Connolly. Those were the names of those who were arrested. So pray for them and pray for an end to abortion across the country. You can go into a store, right, and you can rob $995 worth of goods. Take the makeup, take the meat, take the toilet paper, take the cosmetics, take whatever you want, right? And you can walk out. And even if you're arrested for shopping, you get a slap on the wrist and you're back on the street again. These people for handing out literature and a rose to say, hey, life has value, you know? Don't do this. Don't make this mistake. You're going to harm yourself. They're going to spend a month and a half in jail. It's just, to me, it's a major disconnect, isn't it? I mean, I look at these things. I think, look at the other crimes that take place. People are getting cold cocked on the street. They're getting physically beaten and abused. And those people are on the street again, right? And these people who didn't harm anyone, steal anyone, are going to do a month and a half of their life behind bars. That just doesn't seem right to me. A major lawsuit has been filed against the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and Google, too. This is an interesting story. The lawsuit filed claims that both Google and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts violated more than 1 million people's civil liberties. And the suit alleges that the Bay State's Department of Public Health joined up with Google to surreptitiously put a tracking app on Android phones during the height of COVID. You may never have known. Do you have an Android phone? I find that quite troubling. The state had, they made the app available for voluntary usage, but not that many people downloaded it. I wonder why, right? So the state and Google are, alleged to have placed it on phones without people's knowledge. And those who discovered it, of course, they deleted it. And, okay, fine, now off my phone. Well, guess what? It showed back up on their phones. You go into your phone, you delete an app you don't want, and it pops right back up again. Are you kidding me? The New Civil Liberties Alliance, it's a nonpartisan civil rights firm, they accuse the health department of installing what they're calling spyware. Let me just share with you very quickly what they said. They said, quote, "This is spyware that deliberately tracks and records movement and personal contacts onto over 1 million mobile devices without the owner's permission and awareness." So the state and Google, of course, they did not respond to requests for comments. So we'll see what happens there and how all that shakes out. Anyway, again, you can join me anytime you want. It's 888-914-9149. I do want to change gears because I want to give time to the next issue we're going to get into. Those are some of the big stories of the day. But I want to talk COVID. I want to talk flu. I want to talk all these other strange viruses that are taking place. So if you're not well today, maybe it's a loved one that's not well, you're going to have an opportunity to talk to Dr. Harvey Risch, a real pioneer, a real leader, and a guy who's cautioned a lot of people about some of the inherent post-vaccination problems that are coming up. He's been tracking this. So I invited him to come by and to share his thoughts and to take your calls and address some of these issues. So let's talk about this first, then we'll get Dr. Harvey on with us here. I wanted to address this because I've seen, it's my own observation, and maybe my worldview is different than yours, but there's been, in my opinion, a major uptick in cases now as winter sets in, and we're going to see more of them, right? As you heard here last week, we talked about it. Flu cases. Influenza is also on the rise. And, people die from influenza. I mean, we act like that's no longer a threat. That's a threat. In fact, one hospital system in San Diego, so they're getting so much traffic, they had to put tents up in their parking lot to deal with a very large influx of flu patients. And then on top of that, there's something called respiratory respiratory syncytial, I think is how you say it. It's a virus, you got RSV, you got hospitals around the country reporting of a very big rise in cases of this virus amongst children. It really is targeting kids. The CDC says, look, it's a common respiratory virus. It's usually, causes just mild cold-like symptoms. Most people get over it within 2 weeks. One expert told Fox News that the number of cases is well beyond, it's far beyond what is expected for this type, for this time of year. And that raises questions to me. Why? Why are we seeing such a big spike? And ultimately, what does that portend for the future? Of course, health officials, they want people to be vaccinated. And companies, including Pfizer, they're working to develop a vaccine for RSV. How much money did Pfizer and Moderna and everybody make, right? They must have made a ton of money. And now they see this as another opportunity. Maggie, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Could you say that again in my headset? I missed that. Okay, thank you, Maggie. And the amount of money that's made off of these vaccines is huge. So, you know, there's been, multiple boosters already for your COVID vax. And then, of course, we have, in addition to that, this RSV and all these other things. But there are starting to be some concerns about the mRNA vaccine for COVID. And of course, you know, those have been around for a while, but there are some notable doctors who've been very vocal in coming out and saying they're problematic. And look, I'm just throwing this out to you. I want you to discern. You make your own decisions. You know, many people have been vaccinated and boosted. Some people never have. But now Pfizer and Moderna, they're going to start a clinical trial that's going to follow recipients of the vaccine to see how their hearts do. There have been numerous reports about myocarditis. That's kind of a side effect of this. There was a study in Switzerland that says that 100% of patients they looked at all had some form of myocarditis. And a British study said, hey, there was a sudden, 39% increase in the number of heart-related deaths. So big news, big story. Dr. Harvey Risch joins me today. He is a professor emeritus of epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health and the Yale School of Medicine. And it's great to tap into his genius and expertise. Doctor, welcome back.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
Thank you so much. Let's start with this issue of myocarditis, the swelling of the heart. I know it had affected a lot of young men initially who had been vaccinated, but I was stunned. And I don't know how big the study group, but Switzerland saying 100% of the patients they looked at had some form of this. What do we know, and what is it about the vaccines that's causing heart problems?
Well, I think there's no way that 100% of vaccinated young males will have myocarditis, even subclinical myocarditis. The study, the Thai-authored study, I think is the most accurate for the moment, that showed about 2% of young males, adolescent young adult males, have measurable myocarditis. And when I say measurable, it doesn't necessarily mean they were symptomatic, but when you measure various substances in the blood that show inflammation of the heart muscle, you can see it, and it's telling you that it happened. And we kind of don't know the ramifications of this for long term. People who have clinical myocarditis have sustained heart muscle injury, and even though they can kind of get up and walk out of the hospital and live semi-normal lives, we know that they will have permanent damage to their heart muscle that will lead to later cardiac events in life in, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. So we want to avoid that at all costs and not say that this is a mild illness and doesn't mean much. It means a lot. But what we don't know is whether if you measure the troponin, which is the molecule in the blood that you can measure, and that's a little bit elevated, saying that something has happened, we don't know if that has clinical ramifications 10, 15, 20 years from now. So, we want to avoid that as much as possible. But just because you can measure it doesn't necessarily mean that it's damage. We just don't know how that's going to play out, and we won't for a while.
So this issue of myocarditis, it's been downplayed by vaccine manufacturers and the media. Is it a concern for you? And again, these vaccines, when they initially went out, there was no, human trial, and people were pretty much taking them. Should people be concerned about this? Is something that's going to manifest later? Or if you've had your vaccine now for 2 years or whatever the length of time has been, are you in the clear?
So these are kind of unanswerable questions, because we're going to have to wait and measure and follow up. And there's no shortcuts to doing that. We plunged into this on an emergency basis, and we threw out caution and as a society, and now we have to see exactly what that's led to. And I'm not terribly worried about it, but on the other hand, I fear that there will be some continuing damage to people, and we just have to see. I think it's not that common. Myocarditis, if it's 2%, that's a lot in that age group, in the male age group. But, would you take a 2% risk? Depends on what the benefit is, what the other risk that you're trying to avoid is. And for young adult males, they had almost zero risk of dying from COVID. So there was no real reason for them to have to take the vaccines. And the vaccine mandates were a fraud perpetrated against the society because we know that the vaccines don't prevent transmission. The CDC said it on August 11th. The vaccines do not appreciably prevent spread of the infection. So there's no government rationale for forcing these vaccines. And whether they keep you from being hospitalized or dying, that's your choice, to choose to be treated or not, and not to be compelled to be treated for that. So the goalposts have moved a lot, and the CDC said in August what we knew from a year ago, from December of last year, that the vaccines were not working well for preventing spread, and they're already, even the new booster now, is already out of date. That it was calibrated for the BA4 and BA5 strains of the virus. BA4 is gone. BA5 is now down to about 25% of infections. It's being superseded by BQ1 and BQ1.1, which are taking over. They're escaping quite quickly from immunity in the population, and so that suggests that the vaccines will not work very well for those. And that's where we're at, that there is no way to make a vaccine in a timely enough fashion for the strain that's the one you have to address.
And my guest today is Dr. Harvey Rush. Let me open the phones because I know people want to join us. If you want to get in, it's a good time to do it now. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Let me just follow up on that. So you talk about the vaccine being relatively ineffectual for these new variants that are out there. You know, I have, just from a personal experience, my wife 2 weeks ago got very ill, and I swore she had COVID. All the symptoms were the same, the fatigue, you know, she had fever, she just was not feeling well at all, very lethargic, you know, all the symptoms that seemed to reflect it'd be COVID. So I ended up giving her a test. She tested one day. It wasn't COVID. I said, okay, well, maybe the test was faulty. We'll do it again the next day. Took it again. I hear about people taking it 2 and 3 times, and it ultimately shows up. I waited 2 or 3 days later and testing, and she still doesn't have COVID. Is it possible that there are new forms of COVID where these tests that the government has given us or that we buy over the counter don't detect the new variants? I mean, you know, maybe she had the flu. Maybe she had some other thing. I don't know what she has. I'm not a physician, right? But she's got to go to her doctor and get checked out, I told her. But, you know, how effective are these tests? How long, if the vaccine's efficacy wanes, does the test begin to become diminished with time, too?
Well, the tests have never been that accurate. The PCR test is more accurate than the home test. The home test, I can tell you from my personal experience, my whole household had COVID about 6 weeks ago, mm-hmm. and our older son tested positive on a home test about 3 days after he started feeling symptoms, and the next day tested positive on a PCR test, whereas we tested on home test negative. Our other son tested reliably negative 4 times.
Wow.
So I think that, you know, the tests are very difficult to rely on. PCR test, maybe. If the test is positive, you're probably positive. If the test is negative, it's not telling you very much, especially if you're symptomatic.
Doctor, thank you. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll jump into the phones, okay? My guest today, Dr. Harvey Rush, taking a look at the latest when it comes to COVID. We're now seeing RSV. We'll talk about that, how bad influenza is, and what you might see in the not-too-distant future. We'll take your calls, questions, and comments, too, right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Connected.
Connected.
Relevant Radio.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The CEO of Pfizer decided not to come and answer questions. This is not an inquiry committee, so he was not bound by law. But even in that case, he refused to come and answer some concrete and specific questions. Questions that I think all of us and all of you have. And the first question is, what exactly in these contracts? What are they hiding exactly? I mean, this is how they disclose the contracts. Over 100 pages. every contract with Pfizer, with Moderna, tens of pages of those contracts were blacked out.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, interesting, huh? That was audio from the European Union COVID Commission openly speaking about the Pfizer CEO backing out, you know, of attendance. And when the commission asked for the contract between Pfizer and the EU, they received hundreds of blacked out pages. Strange. You know, we're talking, if you're just joining me, about the rise in sickness in the country. Los Angeles COVID test positivity was up 50% in 2 weeks. And hospitalization now is so intense that some facilities are actually setting up tents to deal with the overflow. That's how serious this problem is right now. Of course, we got influenza, you know, you got COVID, who knows what else is out there. Kids are being affected by RSV. We'll talk about that as well. But my guest today is an expert and one of the bright minds on this issue, very clear spoken. Dr. Harvey Risch joins me, and he's a professor emeritus of epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health and School of Medicine. And you can join us with your questions, your experiences, maybe where you are right now. Doctor, welcome back. It's good to have you with us. Let's go right to the phones. Sure. We'll start in Lewis, Colorado. Lewis, Nathaniel, good afternoon. You're on the air with Dr. Risch.
Hi, thank you. Yes, hi, doctor. I was wondering if you were familiar with the journal articles. One came out at an International Journal of Clinical Practice about informed consent with the vaccine and it actually having the potential to make your symptoms worse if you get sick. And there's also a study out of the Pennsylvania Medicine Center for the mRNA vaccine that had similar results. They looked at how the severity of adverse events appear to be higher when you get the second dose of the vaccine.
Hmm. Thanks, Nathaniel.
I'm not familiar with those papers. I haven't seen that. I don't think that I would expect the illness itself to be substantially different with the vaccine or without the vaccine. I and my family treated our COVID 6 weeks ago with various of the medications that people have heard of, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, budesonide, zinc, vitamin D, and so on, and none of us were hospitalized. It was, the illness was unpleasant and uncomfortable, like most respiratory viral illnesses, but it was, you know, it went away after a few days and left us with a little bit of a mild cough for a few weeks. That went away as it did also. So it's hard to, you know how seriously to take this. And one of the things is that I have said from the beginning of the pandemic not to count cases, that because this illness is by and large annoying but not life-threatening for the great majority of people, especially healthy people without chronic conditions, that they're going to get a better immunity by actually getting the illness than by being vaccinated for it. And the interesting thing, as you mentioned earlier about the Los Angeles cases, I'm not seeing that yet in the national statistics, that according to worldometers that you can look at online, that they're showing for the summer and fall the numbers to have declined dramatically, and there's no evidence yet that anything is starting up again of anything serious, including the deaths as well. So I don't really know if we're going to have a big wave this winter or not. We may or we may not, but there's no evidence that of anything starting yet.
Yeah, the Los Angeles County Daily COVID case count continued recent upward trend, doctor. They said that those numbers are based on the past 2 weeks that they're seeing, a 50% increase in just the past 2 weeks. So who knows? I mean, it could be an anomaly. I hope you're right. I hope we don't see an increase, but we're getting into that season. A lot of people, are vaccinations up for flu, or are people not getting them since they have their COVID vax? And how serious is influenza? And how rampant is it this year?
Influenza is a not very serious illness for the great majority of healthy people, just like COVID. But there are some people who do poorly with it and get hospitalized by it. And as a society, we're used to having 25, 30, 40,000 deaths a year from flu, you know, mostly in elderly people who are pretty sick to start with.
All right.
You know, so we're in that ballpark probably, but I doubt that it's going to be any worse than a typical flu season.
Gotcha. We'll go to Highland, New York next. Joanna's got a question about boosters. A lot of people have gotten them. Some are contemplating getting them. Hi, Joanna.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. It's kind of twofold. So the first thing is my doc, I wasn't going to bother with the booster. I was vaccinated and boosted the first time. And we also, my whole family got the Omicron, the first one, back in last January. I wasn't going to bother with it, but my doctor recommended it. I figured I could trust my doctor. I didn't really feel like I could trust everybody else who was saying it. So I did get it, and my family got the booster. Mm-hmm. Now, my question is it how do we know if our – you know, I do trust my doctor. She's a good doctor. But how do we know, number one, if they're just going along with all the other recommendations or and also, we have so many vaccinations around. People have gotten this thing. And yet the medical facilities and the doctor's offices still require masks. And they, I live in New York, and half of the doctors will not even see you when you have an upper respiratory thing, and it might not even be COVID.
Okay, Joanne, let me...
So I'm just wondering why.
Great, great question. I'll let the doctor respond to you. If you'd like to, doctor, I know her personal physician may have more intimate knowledge of her health, so I know you may not want to address that, but her doctor's saying... is recommending the booster. She
well,
going along
I think
with it?
I think doctors are as afraid as the general public, if not more so, that they mostly go along with the recommendations. They think they have to trust the CDC and the FDA and government pronouncements and policies and the AMA and their specialty boards that have credentialed them. They think they have to trust all these organizations in spite of the massive amounts of corruption that are underlying the whole thing. So most doctors are terrified to say anything outside of the allowable messaging, and so that's what they do.
What do you make of masks? Are they necessary now? Are they a new standard? I mean, how effective are they?
Masks are useless. Masks are tribal theater, basically, to tell you. You which side of the messaging you're
like
on,
that.
Or which side of the anxiety you're on. The whole point of masking from a societal point of view is not whether it helps you, the mask wearer, to prevent anything. That would be your choice. Mm-hmm. It's whether the mask prevents the spread of the illness from you to the bystanders. That's called source control. And there's only been about three studies of source control, and they basically show nothing. They show no substantial or appreciable evidence of benefit for source control. And there's been more than 150 studies of masking over the last 10, 15 years, and all of them show zilch, basically, that there's just no effectiveness of wearing masks. And so what this looks like is we've been sold a bill of plausibility over the last 3 years, if not longer, rather than science. And, you know, it looks like you put something over your face, it's going to stop something from getting through. But, of course, it doesn't. It's you know, like keeping mosquitoes out from a chain-link fence. You know, the stuff goes right through.
Well said. All right, we'll go back to the phones. Beth in Dayton, Ohio. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, hi, Dr. McCullough, or Dr. and Mr. McCullough. Dr. Risch.
You got it.
I'm sorry. My son is 36. He just turned 36 yesterday, and he had a heart episode a couple months ago where his tropism levels were elevated, and they said it was probably from a virus that went dormant. He did have a COVID last December, but he has not been vaccinated. So I was just wondering, none of us were vaccinated because of all the questions concerning it. Are they also finding an uptick in myocarditis if you had COVID itself?
That's a very good question. There's a small amount of evidence that it can happen. It is not very common, but you can measure it. Was he symptomatic? Was there a reason why it was measured?
Yes, when he felt sick for a couple of days and he was exhausted and having stress, like pressure on his chest, he said it felt like someone was pushing a pancake on there. So he was advised to go to the ER from his doctor, and that's when they found out the levels of the tropism were elevated. He got over it pretty quick. But I'm just wondering, like you said, if that's going to be dormant and help, you know, hurt him down the road, or the spike protein can happen from the virus itself, right? Not just the vaccine, right?
Yes, that's correct. So the only way to know, again, is what I said earlier. You just have to follow people like him over time and remeasure his troponin levels, you know, maybe 6 months, a year from now, and see what's happening and, you know, and just try to follow it up.
Doctor, those who die and when they're having autopsies done or there's reports of these very long strands of blood clotting as a result of those who've been vaccinated. I don't know if you have heard anything about that. I'm curious about that. And then I want to follow up just with the thought for those who are listening right now who have been vaccinated and they have that mRNA aspect to this vaccination. How long does that stay in your system? Some people say, oh, it changes your DNA. How serious is the mRNA aspect of this, and how long does this all stay in your system?
My best guess about that is about a month to 2 months is a reasonable time that it's likely to stay around, but it can stay around for up to a year, and it's hard to know exactly what its permanence is. It's been measured, you know, up to a year, but we don't know if that's common or rare. So it's kind of difficult to evaluate this, and it certainly needs an evaluation.
Can you detox from it?
This is an open medical question that my colleagues are trying to figure out.
Fascinating. What do you know about the blood clots?
The blood clots are one of the other important adverse events from the vaccines, just like the myocarditis. The vaccine does not stay in the muscle where it's injected. Mm-hmm. It gets into the bloodstream. It travels around. The spike protein sticks to the lining of the blood vessels, and it attracts platelets that stick on, and it tends to form very tiny clots. And if they grow, they can form these larger clots, and these are the part of the problems of dealing with the vaccination.
All right, Doctor, I'll tell you, hold the thought. I'm going to take a short break. If you're on hold when I come back, I'll grab your call, okay? And if you want to get in, the number's 888-914-9149. Taking a look today at COVID, RSV. Want to dive into that, influenza, your health, the vaccination. It's open phones. We're talking with Dr. Harvey Risch, and that conversation will continue right after this. We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey. Thanks for joining me. We're talking COVID, your vaccination, your booster. We're talking RSV, the flu, and so much more. We'll grab your calls. If you're on hold, I'll do my very best. You know, it's not just COVID that's a factor either. Well, previously in the pandemic, you know, masking was tamped down other respiratory infections. Right now, we're seeing the flu season come upon us. There are a lot of people who are going to be getting the flu if they don't already have it. And then we also have this other virus, this RSV, which there are reports now that infection is on the rise. And some officials are saying, hey, we might have a triple-demic, you know, which could hit local hospital systems from three different sides this winter. I saw one report before coming in the studio today. It was out of Michigan. And they said, look, the cold weather there has more greatly impacted the populace and the pediatric intensive care hospital beds, they say, are now 89% full. That's according to the Detroit Free Press. That's where that was reported. They were citing data from the Michigan Health and Hospital Association and the State Department. So 89%, that's pretty significant. Many of them are being used to care for children with RSV, which can cause, you know, severe illness, rarely death, in those under 18, but COVID is also on the rise in that state. I'm joined today by Dr. Harvey Risch, and I want to get his take on this. We'll take a few of your calls here, too. Doctor, what do we know? What is RSV, and is there a possibility we may have a triple-demic where people are fighting the flu and COVID and other respiratory viruses?
Well, RSV is respiratory syncytial virus, which is hard to pronounce, so everybody says RSV, and that's fine. And it's another one of these respiratory viruses that's inconsequential for most people. The people at risk are either under 6 months of age or in the elderly and chronic ill population as well. Right. And almost everybody has had it by age two in general populations. Although if people became age two in the middle of the lockdown, it's hard to know exactly what their immune status is. But by and large, it's not been a serious illness except for the youngest young, the babies and infants. And whether that changes or not is really, again, uncharted territory. What we have now is children being born to mothers who are vaccinated during pregnancy or being around mothers who've been vaccinated early in the child's life and shedding the vaccine to their children. And so we don't even know that these infants haven't been exposed to the vaccines. It's really hard to tell, or to COVID. And so we don't know what the ramifications of that is on their susceptibility to RSV.
All right.
And flu is the flu, and I don't think that, you know, unfortunately, the flu vaccines have been sequentially poorer every year. Yeah. 10, 15 years ago, they were touting efficacies in the 50 to 60% range. Now it's down more like 20 to 30%, so it's really hard to know what to make of that.
All right, Frank is listening in Sacramento, California. Doctor, he's got a question for you. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Drew. Hello, Doctor. Doctor, I have a question for you. Is there anything, is there a vaccine or anything for RSV and how it would be treated? Maybe would the booster help lower the symptoms? The reason why I asked, my son had it about 3.5 years ago, and it was rough on him. He had corona last year, and he was over within 12 hours. So for me, RSV is kind of a bigger threat for him because of his health concerns. So
how old is he?
Would the booster help with that? He's now 7, and when he had RSV, he was 5. And like I said, we were in and out of the hospital. It turned into pneumonia. So that's the more concern than corona at this point for him.
Right. So that's uncommon. It does happen, as you experienced. RSV, there is no vaccine for RSV. There were a number of attempts at making vaccines for RSV in the past. None of them worked. They all did damage, killed some of the kids in the trials, and so they were discarded. The problem with most of these respiratory viruses is they mutate. That these are RNA viruses, and the RNA replication is a highly error-prone biological process, and so these things mutate wildly, and it's very difficult to make vaccines that are both effective and that cope with the mutational changes in the viruses. So it's been a challenge for 20 or 30 years.
The best approach would be is kind of what we did for COVID, you know, the vitamins, the zinc. Is that pretty much the best defense we can give them?
Vitamin D is an absolute for everybody. Everybody should be taking vitamin D to make sure their levels are at least 50, the serum levels. And for adults, that's typically 5,000 units a day. Plus or minus, you know, depending on body weight. And it's completely safe, and ignore the government recommendations not to exceed 4,000 units a day. Right. Those are ancient and do not deal with the immune system effects of vitamin D. And from that, you know, we still have to find out whether hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, and the other medications work for these other viral illnesses, because now that we know that they work for COVID, in spite of all the suppression and everything one hears on the so-called experts, that they do work and for outpatient disease, and it may work for flu and RSV for all we know also.
Doctor, a couple things, too. We got a lot of people who want to speak there. When I get back to the phones, I was listening to the father there, and it makes me wonder, there are places that are pushing kids to get vaccinated against COVID. I saw a report that the University of Notre Dame is saying that they want students to get the vaccines and the boosters because it's going to help stop the transmission of COVID. Is that the case? And secondly, your thoughts on kids being vaccinated?
So these policies are all wrong. And we know that they're wrong, and everybody knows that they're wrong, that unless a child has obesity or diabetes or chronic kidney disease or something like that, where you discuss it with your pediatrician, there's no reason to vaccinate kids. That in young children, virtually zero, essentially zero healthy young children have died from COVID, and so the vaccines pose a bigger risk to their health than getting COVID itself. Colleges have been mandating it for the spurious reason of claiming that it will reduce the number of cases in the college community. The CDC already said on August 11th that the vaccines don't do that, so that's an irrational thing. Furthermore, as I said, the case counts do not matter. What matters is hospitalizations and mortality. Right. And so counting cases is not a way that you measure and manage a pandemic. And so for the universities and schools to do this is just part of the corruption and misunderstanding of public health.
My guest today is Dr. Harvey Risch. And if you want to do a search for him, he spells his last name R-I-S-C-H. R-I-S-C-H. Doctor, we have some tweets coming in as well. Maggie, why don't you share the tweets just came in? I think it's a great question.
Yeah, Matt wrote to us and said, is there still a financial incentive for hospitals to code every death due to COVID-19, showing higher COVID death rates?
My understanding is that there are very, very large hospital incentives for having COVID deaths, for putting people on ventilators, for giving people remdesivir. All of these inappropriate, paradoxical incentives are still in force.
Why would you incentivize something like that?
Well, the government rationalized it as it cost the hospitals more to do it, so they wanted to cover their costs so the hospitals would feel free to be able to do it. And, of course, that's typical government policy backwards.
All right. Christine has been waiting. She's in Illinois. She's got a question for you, too. Christine, thanks for your patience.
Thank you all for your service there. I'd like to know, does the supplement CoQ10 do any good for the heart? I've heard that it is supposed to be good for the heart itself. And also, my daughter is a nurse at a nursing home, and she has to take all the boosters. I think she's going into her fourth booster. And they are mandatory to have to get it. And I personally don't think they should have to do that. But the other comment I would like to make is that at her facility, no one got COVID when they had the initial pandemic lockdown when it was announced. They all immediately masked up. She said that was the main thing they did, mask up, make sure you keep washing your hands a lot. But they also closed their doors to anyone from the outside, whereas other places may not have done that because it was not mandatory. And none of their patients were lost for quite a while. Right. But the nursing home down the street, for some reason, whatever they did or didn't do for their people, they lost approximately 20 people right after the pandemic was declared. I believe that was in March.
A lot of different policy there. Christy, I'm going to hold you for a second because I want the doctor to respond to some of the comments you made.
I'm not aware that CoQ10 has any substantial benefits. I haven't reviewed the literature, so I can't really speak definitively about that. The issue about whether cases occur in locked facilities is it's very hard to prove that that actually mattered, because you have these things like the technicians who went on a ship to work the South Pole station, weather station or monitoring station, and they were all symptom-free, all PCR tests negative, all segregated, quarantined themselves for 2 weeks before traveling to the South Pole, and a large fraction of them came down with COVID.
So, how do you explain that?
because somebody had it, and just the tests are imperfect, and the symptoms are imperfect.
You know, before I go back to the calls, very quickly, long COVID. There's a lot of talk right now about long COVID. Are we seeing symptoms of that, and are there ways to deal with it for those who are struggling with it?
Long COVID is a real condition. It's not that common, and I'm talking not about people who take 4 or 5 weeks to get over the cough, but about people who have more of a chronic condition that really doesn't relent, that lasts more than that. And there are medical practices that have been gearing up to try to cope with that. The signs and symptoms of long COVID are similar to some of the vaccine adverse reactions, and so there's maybe some commonality in treatment. I'll just put in a plug to be completely transparent that I'm an advisor for and have interest in a telemedicine company called the Wellness Company, and the doctors there that do telemedicine have been working on protocols for treating long COVID.
Doctor, I am grateful for all that you do, and we'll have to do this again. We'll do a follow-up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you for being here today.
My pleasure to be with you.
Dr. Harvey Risch, Professor Emeritus of Epidemiology, the Yale School of Public Health.